Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Lesbi Mommies Radio. I'm your host, Elizabeth Kaliva. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am really, really excited about the topic tonight. It's a little bit different. We are actually going to be talking about male circumcision. Now, why would you care as lesbians about male circumcision? Well, 50% of your pregnancies are probably going to be boys, so you're going to have to make the decision, do I circumcise or do I not circumcise my little boy? So here in the United States, it's just kind of something that we just do. And, you know, I didn't start thinking about this until pretty recently. It was actually when I heard about the origin or the history of circumcision that it really started me thinking about this practice that we do that's so common here in the United States. And the medical establishment's stance is that it's healthier for your son. But I think that hearing the history and hearing about some of the other effects of this practice on boys and men as far as physical effects and sexual effects and psychological effects, that it opens up a whole new can of worms as far as questions. So I'm super excited to have Dr. Ronald Goldman on the show tonight from the Circumcision Resource Center. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. Before we get started, I have a couple of announcements. Next week, we're doing a Tuesday night show, actually, and that's going to be about how to find a great nanny. I actually have heard from some friends that are looking for a nanny that it's not very easy. So I have the Nanny League on next week talking about some tips for how to find a great nanny if that is the child care option you are looking into. And that show is going to air next Tuesday at 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And then also just want to say a huge thank you to all of you that have written me for topic suggestions. I got some really good stuff. Super excited to look into every single one of those. So thank you to all of you who took the time to do that, and always open to suggestions. So if you have any, definitely email me at elizabeth@lesbimommies.com. You can find us online, lesbimommies.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/lesbimommiesradio. I'm also on Twitter at lesbimomsradio. All right, let's get to the show. Let me introduce Dr. Ronald Goldman. Ronald Goldman, PhD, a psychologist, educator, and writer, is the founder and executive director of the Circumcision Resource Center in Boston, a nonprofit educational organization. His groundbreaking investigation of the unacknowledged adverse psychological and social aspects of circumcision includes hundreds of contacts with men, parents, Jews, and medical and mental health professionals. Dr. Goldman is internationally known for his work on circumcision and is the author of Circumcision, The Hidden Trauma, and Questioning Circumcision, A Jewish Perspective. The first book is endorsed by dozens of professionals in mental health, medicine, and social science. His book addressing Jewish circumcision is endorsed by five rabbis, among others. Other writing has appeared in medical journals, newspapers, parenting publications, and Jewish periodicals. Dr. Goldman has participated in over 200 media interviews and was invited by the Council of Europe as the only non-European to participate in an interdisciplinary discussion about circumcision. Various circumcision advocates, including American Academy of Pediatrics representatives, have declined to debate him in national media. Dr. Goldman offers speaking programs on circumcision and provides counseling for those making the circumcision decision and men who have issues connected with their circumcision. Dr. Goldman, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be on with you.
Yeah, and I appreciate it. I know you're in Boston, so you're a few hours ahead, so thank you so much for taking the time on a Monday night to do the show. So my first question is, how did you get into this work? How did circumcision become your life's work?
Well, it was a very personal experience. It happened in the early 80s. As a Jew, I was invited to a Jewish ritual circumcision for a member of my family. And I was not comfortable going, but I did it out of respect for the family members. And I remember very clearly the scream of the baby. This was done at a private home, baby was restrained by a couple of adults, and the ritual circumciser was, you know, doing the cutting in the living room with, you know, a few dozen people around, and it was extremely uncomfortable for me, and I could tell that other people were also uncomfortable. And the baby was screaming at the top of his lungs for over 20 minutes. And this isn't always going to be the case, as I learned later. But you know, I learned, among other things, for example, that the mother wanted a natural birth and was able to have her birth without taking any drugs. And it's become known that if and when the mother takes drugs during labor, that can get into the baby's body and affect response to stimuli after birth. So this baby had a more natural response to the circumcision. And it was just the feeling in my body and my gut was telling me, you know, this was a horrible thing to do. And the baby was screaming in pain and agony and protest. I vowed that I would never attend such a ritual circumcision, and I was also motivated to do some investigation of this practice. And the short summary is, the more I learned, the more it became obvious that this is not something we should be doing.
Wow. And so then that kind of spawned your research and your PhD and everything?
Sure. Yeah. I decided to get the doctorate in psychology, and I thought it was very important to bring a psychological perspective to this issue, because most of the American discussion about this tends to focus on medical issues, which we'll certainly get to.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy. I my best friend is Jewish, and she's invited me to her son's, they're called, it's a bris, right? The name of the ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually haven't had the opportunity to attend. Now that hearing you, I'm glad I haven't attended. But it's interesting because, you know, we think of circumcision for sure as a Jewish thing. Like it's a part of the Jewish tradition. And so, you know, for me, that's like, okay, it's a cultural thing. That's one thing. But in the United States, as non-Jewish Americans, it's also very common here. And it's not because of the Jewish tradition, not because of the Muslim tradition. So talk a little bit about the religious traditions of circumcision, because I know Muslims do it as well. And then talk about why we, the rest of us in the United States, do this practice.
Sure. Jewish circumcision goes back over 3,000 years. And actually, the earliest recorded record of circumcision is about 6,000 years ago in Egypt. And we know historically that back a few thousand years ago, the Jews were slaves in Egypt. And much of what I have to say is speculative, since this happened so long ago, we really don't have definitive proof of how this started with Jews. So I would speculate that as it was a custom at the time, sometimes slaves were mutilated to show their lower status. And what may have happened back in Egypt thousands of years ago is that when Jews were slaves, they may have been circumcised by the Egyptians. And then when Jews became free, they may have continued this practice because, as I'll talk about with the psychological effects, there's a strong motivation to continue circumcision once it's done to one generation. So that's and then once circumcision becomes established in a culture, then that culture tends to develop reasons or justifications or excuses, whatever you want to call them, to explain to themselves and to others why they do it. So that's sort of the short version of how it became common in Jewish culture. Here in the United States, it was obviously much more recent. It started here around the 1870s when it was promoted, among other things, as a preventive cure for masturbation. And back in those days, they didn't have the medical research that we have now. and all kinds of diseases. The causes of them were unknown. So some people who had access to getting a lot of attention decided to blame masturbation for all kinds of horrible things that were happening to people. And with the historical Victorian attitudes and Puritan values, people had a lot of discomfort around sexual matters, and this connection was made between circumcision and masturbation. And actually, historically now, there were over 100 different claims that were made that circumcision prevented or cured various diseases and afflictions. So in any case, it was started being promoted in the late 1800s. And the first group that started doing circumcision were the upper classes. And that's where most of our doctors came from. And again, once a particular cultural group experiences circumcision, they tend to want to do it to the next generation. And these medical doctors, again, started a very long pattern of coming up with medical claims to try to justify circumcision or explain circumcision. And so as some claims were refuted, they would come up with more claims. So there's a history of over 100 of these, and we're still getting them in the last 5 to 10 years. They come up with new claims. And so that's pretty much how it became very common here in the United States.
So crazy to me that it was an anti-masturbation campaign that started circumcision.
Yep.
Now, just out of curiosity, what were some of those claims back then that masturbation
circumcision
caused?
Circumcision was claimed to prevent or cure asthma, blindness, cancer, diabetes, epilepsy, hernia, indigestion, masturbation, of course, promiscuity, tuberculosis, just about everything, I think. It was very common to link these things with masturbation, and circumcision was the preventive cure. So
that's
they
so
thought.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So now you had mentioned how it's common once it gets established for it to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
What is that? Because you'd think, I mean, me listening, it's like, well, gosh, you know, now that we know those things are so silly, of course it's not curing cancer or asthma, but that the medical establishment would catch on. So what is the mechanism by which the medical establishment keeps us going?
Well, this is the psychological perspective, which I have investigated. And psychologists have studied trauma, and they have found that trauma results in a compulsion to repeat the trauma. So just for an example, people might be more familiar with the idea of child abuse. So what happens with child abuse is that those children that experience that, when they become parents, if they become parents, they are more likely to abuse their children. Even though, you know, we as outsiders can say, well, why would you want to do that? But those that are subjected to trauma, if they haven't had that trauma treated or resolved, they're likely to pass that on to the next generation. And there's not necessarily ill will or ill intent here. This is just what people who are victimized by trauma may either believe is the best thing, or they just have such a strong compulsion to do this, they're just doing the best they can given their own personal circumstances and history. So it tends to get passed on that way. Now, when people have a compulsion to do something like that, to hurt others, in order to support their own self-esteem, they want to attach some kind of believable reason to this practice, so they can actually fool themselves into thinking they're doing something good here or something beneficial for their children and for the next generation. So there's a strong compulsion to come up with reasons to support the practice. And this is unfortunately what's it's still happening, as I say, in this country. We come up with claims, again, about every 10 to 12 years, there's a new round of claims because the old studies get forgotten, new researchers become interested in the practice, and it's important to point out here, when there are studies done on circumcision in this country in particular, the overwhelming proportion of studies is done to look for a benefit. So researchers tend to find what they're looking for. In other words, if they have a research question, then they're going to find an answer to that research question. And a lot of, I'd say some medical doctors have made a career out of publishing studies that claim benefits for circumcision. So there's a lot of money involved here. There's also, there are personal factors. If these researchers tend to be circumcised themselves, so they have a strong motivation to perpetuate the practice because, again, it's a matter of feeling good about one's own genital condition. And if one has performed, for example, hundreds or even thousands of circumcisions, one wants to feel good about what he or she has done in that matter. So there's a strong psychological motive from various perspectives to keep this practice going.
Absolutely, and that reminds me of something that I think that you had said in the other interview that I had heard, which is you have published or tried to publish studies, you've done your own studies on the negative aspects of it, and you couldn't get them published here in the U.S., right? You had to publish them in European journals?
That's right, yeah. The British Journal of Urology is the one that published a few studies that I wrote. So it is very difficult because, the process with getting something in a medical journal, it gets assigned by the editor to a peer reviewer. And since so many studies in this country on circumcision are done to seek a benefit, those are circumcision advocates that have done those studies, and they are perceived to be the experts on the topic, since they've published more about circumcision than most other medical doctors. So they get the submissions, whether it's from somebody like me or, for example, a critic of circumcision, and they're not likely to approve of a perspective that conflicts 180 degrees with what they've been working on themselves for years or even decades. So it's very difficult. And if the peer reviewer doesn't accept the proposed report or study, then it doesn't get published.
So fascinating. And I just love that point you're making, because we think that if it's published science, it's legit. You know, if we see all these studies that show one side of something, then that's the only thing that exists, right? And we forget that science is done by humans. There's bias there. And so that, you know, just that absolutely comes into play with science. So thank you. It's a really good point. Now,
but that's one of the lessons of circumcision, and there are many, but one of the lessons is to recognize that science is culturally biased and subject to one's personal biases and psychological influences.
Absolutely. I love that. I mean, I don't love that that happens, but I love that that's a reality, because it explains a lot of other issues that I have with Western medicine. Talk about how other countries view circumcision. Because when I was growing up and I wasn't really thinking about it, I just assumed everybody's circumcised around the globe. And as I got older, I realized, these people from these other countries, they don't circumcise. So talk about the prevalence of circumcision around the globe.
All right. Well, the global circumcision rate is, or at least among adults now, is probably in the 70% range, but a very important factor there is that the overwhelming majority of males who are circumcised around the globe are Muslims, because for them it is a cultural or religious practice, and there are a billion and a half Muslims, I think. Well, actually, let me rephrase that a little bit. The the circumcision rate around the world is actually in the 30% range. Most males are not circumcised around the world, and of the minority who are circumcised, the overwhelming majority of them are Muslims. Okay, and then you know we have Jews, of course, but they're a much smaller proportion of the global population. So it's very rare outside of Muslim countries and where there is a significant Jewish population. It's rare for circumcision. I mean, circumcision is rare in Europe. It's rare in South America. It's rare in most of Asia. It's more common in Africa because there's more Muslim cultures there. So it's a very uncommon, and the only other countries that have done it for any significant percentage and only for a relatively limited amount of time would be Canada, Great Britain, and Australia. But their rates never got as high as our rates. The circumcision rate here in the United States peaked around the late 60s, over 80% nationally. But now that rate, according to some research, is around the mid-50s. So in other words, a little over 50% of males born currently are circumcised. And that rate, again, needs a little clarification because there's a wide range of the popularity of circumcision or the unpopularity, as the case may be, depending on where in the country we're looking at the data. It tends to be very... circumcision is very unpopular on the West Coast. So the circumcision rate out there could be in the 20s or 30% range, whereas, for example, in the Midwest, it can approach the high 70s. Elsewhere, it's in the 50s and 60s. So, again, you know, we're unique. We're the only country in the world that circumcises male infants as often as or as high a percentage as we do for non-religious reasons.
Right. It's so interesting. So, you know, when you're at the doctor and you had your baby and they're talking to you about circumcision, at least when I was doing some research online, it seemed like the general medical consensus is it's healthier for your son, and they have some basis for that. Like you were saying, they always come up with some reasons. So are we leaving them open for health issues if we leave them intact and we do not circumcise?
Well, first, let me mention in terms of the health claims, it's important to qualify the claims that are made. And it's often reported in the media, unfortunately, that you know there's a health benefit for circumcision. It typically gets a headline. And that's a cultural bias right there, because you got the editor of the publication and you know the writer may be circumcised men or having a bias towards circumcision, and all they see usually in their wire services are reports claiming a benefit for circumcision, so that's what tends to get the attention. But if one looks a little closer and reads the small print, or even if you go back to take the trouble to read the actual study that's being reported on, one finds that this is actually a potential preventive health claim. And what that means is the actual claim is that if boys are circumcised, then they're less likely to acquire a certain disease or infection. Okay, now what they don't tell you in most of these media reports is what the actual numbers are. But the numbers are very enlightening. I mean, the most favorable numbers for these health claims would be for urinary tract infection, and the frequency of urinary tract infection is about 1 in 100 male babies. So that means even if you were not circumcised, you would only, as a male baby, you would only have a 1 in 100 chance of getting this urinary tract infection. So if given the best case scenario, that one baby were saved from urinary tract infection, that would be a benefit to that 1 out of 100. Now, what about the other 99? They don't get any benefit at all, and they will experience the harm of circumcision, which we'll get into. So the short answer is there are no actual health benefits for circumcision. There are only claimed medical benefits, and they're either very rare, they're easily treatable, and it just doesn't make a lot of common sense to be cutting so many baby boys to possibly prevent 1 in 100 urinary tract infections. And even there's a claim for preventing penile cancer. Well, the actual rate of penile cancer among males who are not circumcised is 1 in 100,000. So that's very rare. So the fact that circumcision advocates are pushing a claim like that, circumcision, they say, will prevent penile cancer, gives you an idea of maybe some of their motivations and values.
Wow. That's crazy. So now talk a little bit about there are actual risks to the circumcision itself. And in fact, why don't you talk about the procedure? Because when you shared that before, I found that just scary to think about what a little baby is going through. So talk about the procedure of circumcision and then the actual health risks of circumcision.
Yeah. Okay, the procedure is if the baby is born in a hospital, they take the baby, separate from the mother, take the baby to another room where they are set up to do these procedures. They secure the baby on a plastic constraint. The trade name is called a circumstraint. And this secures the baby because they have Velcro straps that they put around the baby's wrists and ankles so the baby can't move his arms or legs. The only part of the body the baby can move during this is his head. So, and another interesting thing is that for most of medical history, medical doctors believe that newborn infants could not feel pain. That shocks a lot of people.
Seriously.
That was finally addressed in 1987 in an article in the New England Journal of Medicine. Actually, some parents complained that surgery was being done on their babies without any pain medication. It's amazing to think of that, but that's what was going on in the medical profession. And this is an indication of the psychological denial that goes on for people who have a need to be immune from feeling the pain that they're causing other people, in this case, male infants. So they just adopt the belief that babies don't feel, even though the baby could be screaming, and probably is, during the circumcision, people can literally not see, not hear, not feel something. If there's a trauma involved on the part of the person that is denying the reality, then they can not notice and not be aware of certain things that are happening that other people who are not traumatized would be able to recognize. So they didn't realize the pain, and these babies were, again, the foreskin, which is normally connected to the glands or the head of the penis, is forcefully separated. Foreskin normally separates from the glands. It can take a whole range of time because people are individuals and they develop differently at different rates. But generally, it generally separates from the glands after about maybe 3 or 4 years. It's different for different individuals. But in order to do the circumcision of the foreskin, it has to be forcefully separated. So you can imagine, here we're talking about the most sensitive part of the body, and they're forcefully separating it from what it's connected to before they cut it off. And the way they cut it off is they have a device that's a clamp. And we have illustrations of this, one-line drawings on our website if people are interested in that later. I don't know. But there's a clamp device that's used to secure the foreskin, and then once the foreskin is secured in this clamp, then they take a cutting instrument and cut it off. Okay, so getting back to a point I was going to make before, once medical doctors realized that babies could feel pain, they started experimenting with pain medication for circumcisions. And there's been ongoing research on this. And what they have come up with is injections at a couple of different places on the penile shaft, or even a few places around the penile shaft, injecting pain medication. You can imagine this isn't going to be too pleasant for the male infant to experience.
Yeah.
So they use these pain medications, anesthetics, but the research shows that it isn't always effective, and even when it is effective, it decreases the pain, but it doesn't eliminate the pain. So can you imagine undergoing genital surgery, at being forcefully restrained, and then feeling some of the surgical pain, not even being protected from that? So this is certainly a traumatic experience for the baby who has to go through this.
I mean, I just can imagine this newborn baby, because they do it in the first, like, week of life, right? I mean, these are newborn babies. And to be separated from your mom, first of all, and then to be strapped down in this contraption, I mean, that in and of itself is traumatic. And through what you said, I mean, so crazy. And the whole part about babies not feeling pain, I actually didn't believe that when I heard that for the first time. I had to, like, confirm that.
Yeah, I know.
It's
a lot of people, because we expect more from medical doctors, but, you know, they're human beings with certain limitations in this case.
Oh, my gosh. So what about the risks to that procedure? I mean, what are the chances of them cutting too far, or, I mean, just anything that can happen in that procedure?
It's difficult to have accurate information about this. Certainly, the circumcision advocates try to minimize the complication rate, and you know there are studies that report a complication rate as high as 38% in the first year. Other studies report, for example, a significant complication rate of 2 to 10%. Generally, doctors try to minimize this complication rate. I guess I want to take a little sidetrack here. There's a process called informed consent in the hospital, which means that a parent has to sign a form confirming that the parent has been instructed by the medical staff about the procedure, what's involved, its presumed benefits or risks, and alternatives. And then, so basically, the idea here is that a parent makes the decision to circumcise by being informed. The problem with this process is the parents are not truly informed. The risks of circumcision are minimized. The negative effects are not talked about at all. The medical claims are reported pretty much as they are in the media, with, you know, just a few simple words. So parents are making this decision with what they think is accurate and complete information, which is actually a legal requirement, but they're not getting that information. So they're signing up based on what they've heard. And unfortunately, some of these parents, you know, may talk to their friends later, or they may go online, or for some other reason acquire some additional information about circumcision after they've made a decision to have this procedure done, and be very regretful. And some of them have even apologized to their male children later in life. So it's a problem getting the information out there. So what are the negative effects? Well, there are over 20 different complications resulting from circumcision. The most minor complications can be bleeding or infection. The most severe complication is death, resulting from some developing complications that can't be fixed. So whenever you cut a normal, healthy, functioning part of the body, you put that person at risk. Any surgery has risks. And then the other thing is there are unknown negative effects of circumcision. Since the great majority of circumcision studies have the intention of trying to find a benefit, they're certainly not looking for any negative effects. And we don't know some of the negative effects. For example, on male infant mortality, for example, we don't know the effects of male circumcision on that. We don't know how this affects a lot of psychological problems, ADHD, for example, which is much more common in boys. So because we don't have the research, the authorities that tend to take positions on this take their position based on what research is available. And, of course, if a lot of it is intended to come up with a medical benefit, then that's what they report in their review of the research before they take their position. And they're not looking at the potential harm.
Oh, so crazy. We really, it's like we have this faith in our scientific community that they're doing unbiased work and they're looking for both sides. And it just, time and time again, we find out it's not that way.
Yeah. You know, that I remember being taught that in high school, actually. This is what science is for. It's to have an unbiased review of the data and come up with a neutral conclusion that's not affected by personal biases. Well, the reality, unfortunately, is not that way. And particularly, again, when a factor like trauma is involved, then and cultural practice and conformity. I mean, there's so many pressures on some of the medical people who are reviewing this to come up with a particular result. So it's very important that people do their own investigation, not trust the profession on this particular issue. On other things, they do a wonderful job, but this is one of their weaknesses that people need to check out for themselves.
Yeah, and I would also add to that, anytime there's a lot of money involved, that's another time you should do your own research.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that we don't hear, I'm guessing, from your doctors is the sexual implications of circumcision. Because, like you said, it's a normal functioning part of the human body that we're cutting off. It's part of the male genitalia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're religious or not, I don't think God or, I don't think nature would have a part be there if it didn't at least, be sticking around if it doesn't need to be there, right? So,
So
you just think about it, it's like, well, it's a functioning part of the body, and obviously it's going to have an impact on sexuality and sexual pleasure and sensitivity.
Right.
So talk a little bit about the sexual implications of circumcision.
I will. First, I want to say that medical doctors who are strong circumcision advocates have been asked directly, what are the functions of the foreskin? They don't know.
Well,
another shocking realization. They don't know the function of the part that they are advocating be cut off. It's not in medical textbooks. It's not in textbooks of urology. A lot of textbooks of urology show the so-called normal penis as a circumcised penis. They don't show it with the foreskin. So there's your cultural bias right there in the literature. So they're not getting very complete information when they're going to school. So most circumcised men do not know what they're missing. Based on some recent medical reports, circumcision removes up to one-third of the highly sensitive tissue on the penile shaft. The adult foreskin is about 12 square inches in area and is actually a double layer, a movable sleeve. Medical studies have shown that it provides protection, enhances sexual pleasure, and facilitates intercourse. Cutting off the foreskin removes several kinds of specialized nerves. Men circumcised as adults describe the decrease in sensitivity as like seeing in black and white compared to seeing in color. So the fact that we could see in black and white without knowing what color was, we don't know what we're missing if we're circumcised.
Right.
Without the protection of the foreskin, there is progressive desensitization, particularly in older men, which could contribute to erectile dysfunction. I have colleagues who did a preliminary study a few years ago, and they found that circumcised men were 4.5 times more likely to use erectile dysfunction drugs. So that's a bit of a summary of what the what the sexual effects would be. And they're significant.
Yeah, and great for the manufacturers of erectile dysfunction drugs.
Definitely, definitely, yeah.
And as women, too, it's like we have a covering over our, I don't know what you call it, but our, you know, highly sensitive area, our clitoris, it's, we have a hood over our mm-hmm. clitoris that protects our clitoris from being rubbed up against everything. And so, I mean, I just think of myself
sure.
of what if that highly sensitive tissue was constantly being rubbed by clothing. It mm-hmm. makes sense. It's going to be
yeah.
completely desensitized. And so that's
yeah.
what we're doing to these little boys who grew up to be men. You know, we're mm-hmm. sexual creatures, and so it's like we're really limiting just the sexual satisfaction of our sons when we circumcise them. I mean, in theory, right?
That's right. I mean, there's the loss of the actual very sensitive tissue itself, and then there's the functions which include protecting what it's covering. And
right.
without that cover, the lack of protection, the surface of the glands ahead of the penis is very sensitive. The nerves are very close to the surface. You know, but like any exposed part of the body that gets subject to friction, I mean, think of like your eyelid covering your eye.
Yeah.
If you didn't have that eyelid, your eye would dry out and it would function not quite as well as it does having the eyelids where they belong. So the head of the penis becomes drier, thicker, and so there's sensitivity lost on what's left in addition to the part that was gone forever.
Crazy. Now, you're a psychologist, and you've,
yep.
I'm assuming, talked to several, I think you even said in the bio, talked to several hundreds of men about the impacts,
mm-hmm.
the psychological impacts. So talk a little bit about those psychological
yep.
impacts to boys and men.
It is very interesting. What I've learned is that there are many men out there who have disliked being circumcised since they were boys. And this is a difficult subject for them to talk about. It's painful, and you know, a lot of people aren't open to it. But there was a poll taken of circumcised men that did get published in one of the journals over in the United Kingdom, and it described a wide-ranging physical, sexual, and psychological consequences. Some men have strong feelings of anger, shame, distrust, and grief about having been circumcised. I mean, imagine, again, think of yourself being in the same position, forcefully restrained, someone cuts off part of your sexual anatomy.
Yeah.
Feeling anger about that is easy to understand. Shame, because now you don't have what you were born with, what's natural. You feel like you're less. Distrust, well, you weren't being protected. Babies rely on mother in particular to protect them from harm. So if you can't trust your mother, who can you trust? So we end up instilling distrust in a lot of men with this. And of course, grief, because there's the loss itself. And these are feelings most men that they're not conscious that if they have these feelings, they don't connect them to being circumcised. And then there's sexual anxieties that can be connected to being circumcised. I find in some of my research reduced emotional expression. And this is also something that has been reported in clinical studies. Reduced emotional expression from circumcised men. Lower self-esteem, avoidance of intimacy, and depression are all potential consequences of circumcision. I mean, so again, this is not to say it's going to be everybody. Certainly we know circumcised men who are not at least exhibiting some of these feelings, but they're out there. I mean, even if it were 10 or 15%, that's still millions of men.
Yeah.
Male satisfaction with circumcision depends on a lack of knowledge and awareness about circumcision.
Right.
Most circumcised men seem satisfied because they may not understand what circumcision is. I did a little survey some years ago and asked men to estimate the area of an adult foreskin. And the guesses for that ranged as low as 1/2 square inch. Now, again, I stated earlier that the area of an adult foreskin is about 12 square inches.
Yeah.
So there's a very clear numerical example of how circumcised men can tend to minimize what they've lost.
Yeah.
So, and they don't know, the benefits of the foreskin. They may not be aware of certain feelings and their connection to circumcision, and they may be afraid to disclose these feelings. So what happens is the more men know about circumcision, the more likely to be dissatisfied. So if they protect themselves from that knowledge, then they live the best they can emotionally,
right,
with being circumcised.
Yeah, it makes sense. Now, it's
yeah.
funny because, you know, we've heard, especially those of us that are women, have heard a lot about female genital mutilation and mm-hmm. Africa in particular, and I know they call it, it's called female circumcision in a lot of places to make it seem less ugly, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But most of us think of that as just horribly cruel, inhumane, like no one in the United States, I would say no, like Americans that are not, you know, in that part of that culturally have that practice would support anything having to do with female circumcision. But when it comes to cutting off a functioning part of the male genitalia, that's mm-hmm. almost just not questioned. And it's so funny because when you stop to think about it that way, when you really compare practices of, you know, you're both cutting off functioning part of a sex organ, it just doesn't seem the right thing to do. So it's just kind of crazy that we keep doing it.
I have a quote from George Bernard Shaw, which I like. Here it is. Custom will reconcile people to any atrocity.
Wow.
So what we have here in the United States is a custom, embedded cultural practice, and people tend to feel a lot of pressure to conform. There's been studies in psychological literature about the tendency to conform. And I remember this one study, they had people look at a diagram on the wall, and the researchers had three people that were what they call confederates of the researchers, which means they were instructed to respond a certain way. And then they had the test subject. So the test subject listened to the responses of these three confederates say something that wasn't visually true of this diagram. And then they would ask the test subject, what do you see? And, of course, if the test subject were to say what he or she really saw, it would be in conflict with what the test subject just heard these three other people say. But 75% of people responded that they saw what the other three people said, even though it was untrue.
Wow.
So that is a scientific study to show the effect of conformity. People will
yep.
tend to say or do what others around them are saying or doing. It takes courage to be in the minority, and most people don't have it or don't use it. So there's that pressure, as I mentioned briefly previously, there's a compulsion to repeat the trauma, which by repeating the trauma, we tend to psychologically protect ourselves from feeling some of these uncomfortable feelings that I just mentioned a few minutes ago. There's also an overdependence on presumed experts. There's our denial of feelings. If we have less emotional sensitivity in general, and that tends to happen, that's one of the effects of trauma, is we tend to become emotionally numb, some people more than others, of course. And with emotional numbing, then we don't feel the harm of what this can be doing to little baby boys. So this, again, lack of knowledge, lack of awareness, and these other factors, certain beliefs about infants, for example, we would say, well, we wouldn't do this to a 10-year-old. We wouldn't take a 10-year-old boy and, you know, secure him and then cut off part of his genitals. But somehow we give ourselves permission to do this. It's okay to do this to babies because they're not yet human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of our cultural denial. Actually, it's related to what the medical doctors used to believe about 30 years ago, which is that babies don't feel pain because
right.
they're not yet real human beings. Well, the culture, you know, has a certain attitude about this being okay for babies but not older children, and that goes with our tendency to want to believe, to want to make it okay, because
yep.
it's so threatening for us to recognize the truth. And the truth is, this is traumatic, this is harmful, this hurts sexuality. In fact, as I write about in my book, Circumcision, the Hidden Trauma, this affects all of us directly and indirectly as a culture. And
yep.
is a contributing factor to a lot of our personal and cultural problems. So if people are interested in that, it takes a lot more time and space to describe. But this is partly why I feel so passionate about getting the message out there so that we can kind of turn this around.
Yep. Oh, God, so good. Just a quick side note there. I had interviewed a lady that does pre and perinatal psychology. And, you know, it was like we think,
yeah.
since I don't remember what happened at my birth or when I was very little, mm-hmm. That it doesn't matter. And, you know, in her studies, pre and perinatal,
yeah.
I mean, even before birth, there's studies that show that we do have those memories stored, whether they're conscious or not,
yeah.
another story, but they are there.
Mm-hmm.
So just like you're saying, it doesn't actually... They're being stored in our memories, and they're affecting us. So, really great stuff.
It's actually,
I know go ahead, sorry.
The whole body becomes affected by trauma, and
mm-hmm.
One way of looking at it is the body remembers what the mind forgets, and
right.
the forgetting. The psychological term for this is called association or dissociation. Association. And again, that's a protective mechanism that defends us against feeling these overwhelming emotions of pain, fear, and you know, other feelings that would go with a experience of being circumcised. So we need that to survive. We need to separate ourselves from those feelings to survive the overwhelming experience. Unfortunately, by a product of that process of dissociation and not being aware is that we're not aware when we pass it on to the next generation.
Yep. Wow. Amazing conversation, Dr. Goldman. I know it's late for you, so I want to get you off, but is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Well, I want to suggest what some people can do about the situation.
Yes.
I certainly hope...
Yes, thank you.
...they... contact friends and family who may be having children in the future and just, you know, raise their awareness about this is something that is important for them to be informed about because they're going to be asked, they're going to be solicited if they have a baby in a hospital, they're going to be solicited, for a male child to declare whether they want to have them circumcised or not. So it's important to make an informed decision. So your listeners can help inform people that they know.
Yep.
Women are particularly important in this issue because they're not circumcised, so they're not directly affected by the trauma that men who are circumcised would be subjected to. So I strongly urge women to speak up about this to help protect male children. And in addition to contacting friends and family. Of course, you know, with the internet, we have social media. There's all kinds of ways to get a message out. Certainly to get people informed about this by going to various websites, including ours, circumcision.org, Circumcision Resource Center. So we hope that people take some action. And also, again, if people are motivated, contact people in the media, write letters to the editor, call your local papers, make comments online. There's lots of media stories that come out on circumcision almost every day. Make comments online and ask these media editors and others to reporters do a story on questioning circumcision, and they have professional and ethical obligations to present different points of view on controversies. Well, unfortunately, most of the time they don't do that on this on this issue. So if they hear from enough people, maybe they'll reconsider how they report this. And then finally, if people are passionate enough, we certainly welcome volunteers to help us do our work. And also, like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Goldman. What a fascinating conversation. And you know, share this show. You guys can do to share this interview, get Dr. Goldman's information out there. Really important information. Dr. Goldman, awesome work. I really just want to acknowledge you for what you've done and what you're doing to support future generations from having to deal with this. So thank you. It's really admirable, and I really appreciate your time, and have a great week.
Thank you. I want to thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you and raise awareness as the listeners out there, and urge them to, you know, move forward with whatever they're comfortable with. And sooner or later, and hopefully sooner, we will beat this issue and move on to a better life for all of us.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, good night.
All right, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right, everyone. I know that was a tough conversation for some people because it's not something you want to think about. But please do definitely check out his website at circumcision.org. There's a ton of information there. Really, really, really great information. Just take, do some of your own thinking about the topic and make a choice that works for you, obviously. Thank you so much for tuning in. Appreciate it. If you like the show, would love a review on iTunes. That would be really awesome. The reviews actually help to have the show show up better in search results. So, give me a review, whether it's good or bad. I'd love to hear it. And definitely email me with your suggestions on topics at elizabeth@lesbymommies.com. Have an amazing, amazing week, and we'll catch you next week on Tips for Finding a Great Nanny. Take care.